Hi, welcome to Rational and Relational Faith. My name's Nathan. I'm one of the teaching pastors here at Shelter Rock Church. You've made it to the third class. Today, we're going to look at two cosmological arguments. One is based on contingency, and the other is based on temporality. But before we launch into these cosmological arguments, which essentially just show that God is the best explanation for the universe's existence and also for the beginning of the universe. But before we launch into that, I want to talk just a moment about why apologetics is important again. I don't want us to forget this. Remember how we said that apologetics did three things, that it shapes culture, it strengthens the believer, and it wins unbelievers. Well, that second one, that it strengthens the believer, is really important. And I'm reminded of a story. I actually experienced this story. I went to Denver Theological Seminary a little over a year ago to a doctoral class on the subject of apologetics. And the professor, Doug Groteis, who is a world-renowned apologist, he was sharing something very personal. He's written a great big book on apologetics. If you're ever interested in it, I would say check it out. It's in the list of recommended reading that I provide in our syllabus. But he shared this personal story about his wife. Now, his wife was a genius. We're talking a Mensa person. And she helped to edit his books and so many other things. And he lost her to this disease, which is something akin to a very slowly degenerating form of dementia. And he watched her slowly die over time. And as he was sharing this, I mean, it was heart-wrenching. But one of the things that he said that really strengthened my resolve that apologetics is important is that he said it was his apologetics that helped to carry him through these hard times. That when you go through something like that, just intense suffering, and maybe you know some people who are going through something like that, or maybe you yourself have gone through something like that, sometimes knowing an apologetic can help strengthen your faith enough to help you persevere. And that's one of the things I want to say about apologetics. It can help strengthen the believer to help them to continue to persevere. So all this hard work you're putting in is not in vain, and this is why I'm so extremely gratified that you're continuing in the class, and I have to say I respect you a lot for taking a course like this. So now, what about these cosmological arguments? Well, let's look at the first one. The first one simply is one based on contingency. It was developed by a guy named Leibniz, and it says that God is the best explanation for the universe's existence. Now, the scripture tells us this. John 1, verses 1 and 3 say this: "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. All things came into being through Him, and without Him not one thing came into being." How many things came into being through Him? That is Jesus, all things. And not one thing came into being without Him. So the Scriptures teach us this, but we're going to make an argument that doesn't even involve Scriptures. So Leibniz had this insight, and we kind of touched on it in our last video on the ontological argument, which is posted, so you want to check that out. He asked this question: why is there something rather than nothing? Now, the ontological argument gets at that, but Leibniz is looking for an explanation, not a cause for the universe. Now, if you don't know who Leibniz was, I mean, he was a super genius, a polymath, I mean, a philosopher, a theologian. He invented calculus. For all those people who are out there struggling with calculus or have, you can thank him. He actually did this independently at the same time as Sir Isaac Newton. But so he's a brilliant guy, and he came up with this thing that we now call the principle of sufficient reason. We call it PSR for short. And what it basically says is this: there must be a reason or rational explanation for the existence of one state of affairs rather than another. The principle of sufficient reason, you can check your glossary on this for a little bit of more information, but it basically says that there must be a reason or a rational explanation for the existence of one state of affairs or one thing rather than another. And you'll remember last time we spoke during the ontological argument about two kinds of being, contingency and necessity. What about the world then? The world that we live in, is it a necessary thing or being, or is it contingent? I'm going to argue that the world, and I think Leibniz is right too on this, is just a collection of contingent things. If you look at the universe, everything in it is contingent. And as if you look at it as a whole, it's just a collection of contingent things. It doesn't seem to me that this requires that the universe be necessary. So here are the basics. This is an argument from contingency. It is interested in an explanation for the cosmos. But the second argument, the cosmological argument we're going to look at, is interested in the cause of the cosmos's beginning. So let's look at the first one and kind of talk about what that's going to be. Let's begin by looking at this short video on the contingency argument. That's the first form of the cosmological argument. Check that out, and after you finish watching it, maybe the graphics will help you understand it. We're going to talk about it for just a moment.
We live in an amazing universe. Have you ever wondered why it exists? Why does anything at all exist? Gottfried Leibniz wrote, "The first question which should rightly be asked is, why is there something rather than nothing?" He came to the conclusion that the explanation is found in God. But is this reasonable? Everything that exists has an explanation of its existence. If the universe has an explanation of its existence, that explanation is God. The universe exists. From these, it follows logically that the explanation of the universe's existence is God. The logic of this argument is airtight. If the three premises are true, the conclusion is unavoidable. But are they more plausibly true than false? The third premise is undeniable for anyone seeking truth. But what about the first premise? Why not say, the universe is just there, and that's all? No explanation needed. End of discussion. Well, imagine you and a friend are hiking in the woods and come across a shiny sphere lying on the ground. You would, naturally, wonder how it came to be there. And you'd think it odd if your friend said, there's no reason or explanation for it. Stop wondering. It just is. And if the ball were larger, it would still require an explanation. In fact, if the ball were the size of the universe, the change in its size wouldn't remove the need for an explanation. Indeed, curiosity about the existence of the universe seems scientific and intuitive. Someone might say, if everything that exists needs an explanation, what about God? Doesn't he need an explanation? And if God doesn't need an explanation, then why does the universe need an explanation? To address this, Leibniz makes a key distinction between things that exist necessarily and things that exist contingently. Things that exist necessarily exist by necessity of their own nature. It's impossible for them not to exist. Many mathematicians think that abstract objects like numbers and sets exist like this. They're not caused to exist by something else. They just exist by necessity of their own nature. Things that exist contingently are caused to exist by something else. Most of the things we're familiar with exist contingently. They don't have to exist. They only exist because something else caused them to exist. If your parents had never met, you wouldn't exist. There's no reason to think the world around us had to exist. If the universe had developed differently, there might have been no stars or planets. It's logically possible that the whole universe might not have existed. It doesn't exist necessarily, it exists contingently. If the universe might not have existed, why does it exist? The only adequate explanation for the existence of a contingent universe is that its existence rests on a non-contingent being, something that cannot not exist because of the necessity of its own nature. It would exist no matter what. So, everything that exists has an explanation of its existence, either in the necessity of its own nature or in an external cause. But what about our second premise, Is it reasonable to call the explanation of the universe God? Well, what is the universe? It's all of space-time reality, including all matter and energy. It follows that if the universe has a cause of its existence, that cause cannot be part of the universe. It must be non-physical and immaterial, beyond space and time. The list of entities that could possibly fit this description is fairly short, and abstract objects cannot cause anything. Leibniz's contingency argument shows that the explanation for the existence of the universe can be found only in the existence of God. Or, if you prefer not to use the term God, you may simply call him the extremely powerful, uncaused, necessarily existing, non-contingent, non-physical, immaterial, eternal being who created the entire universe and everything in it.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that video. I hope that helped to clarify things. So let's take a look at each of the premises of this argument. Remember, an argument is just a kind of a logical case being made for a certain position in hopes to get someone to understand it and believe it. So there are premises, and then there is a conclusion. Let's look at the first premise of this argument from contingency. It says this, that everything that exists has an explanation of its existence, either in the necessity of its own nature or in some external cause. Now, this is, again, that contingency argument of the cosmological argument. Now, this is also a softer form of the principle of sufficient reason. Remember how we talked about PSR before? Well, it merely requires any existing thing to have an explanation of its existence, whether that's out of necessity or out of a contingency. This premise is compatible with there being brute facts, for example, about the world. So it's a very modest, soft form of PSR, or principle of sufficient reason. So one of the things you want to keep in mind is that when we think about things like this, explicability should be our default position for making judgments. We can't give the whole universe a free pass. I mean, that would just simply be question begging. So everything that exists has an explanation of its existence, either in the necessity of its own nature or some external cause. In other words, something caused it, so therefore the universe would be contingent. And what about the second premise? Well, if the universe has an explanation for its existence, that explanation is God. Now, why say God? Well, we could have said necessary being, because it seems to me that the universe, because by definition it includes all of physical reality, whatever caused the universe to exist has to at least be causally prior to the universe's existence. It has to transcend space and time. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, if all physical and material things, time and space, are what the universe is composed of, then whatever brought the universe into being can't be composed of space, time, and matter. Why? Because those things didn't occur until after the Big Bang, if you will. So whatever brought them into being, whatever brought this into being, couldn't itself be a cause thing, or we'd have an infinite regress, but it would have to be an uncaused thing that is necessary. And it seems to me that if what brought the universe into being has to be immaterial and non-physical and timeless and spaceless, that doesn't leave us with a lot of options. I mean, it leaves us with only two I can think of. One would be something like a mind. The other would be abstract objects. But abstract objects, like numbers, don't really stand in causal relations. They don't cause anything. The number 12 doesn't cause this camera to record. It doesn't cause a pencil to be moved on a desk or something. But what about minds? Could minds cause things? I think that we actually have a good argument here. So what about the third premise? I don't think anyone's going to argue this one. The universe exists. I mean, you'd have to be way out there. Maybe you could be a solipsist and think that the external world is just a figment of your imagination, so to speak. But it seems to me that most reasonable people will conclude that the universe does, in fact, exist. So Let's one more time review the argument here. It says everything that exists has an explanation of its existence, either in the necessity of its own nature or in some external cause. If the universe has an explanation for its existence, that explanation is God. The universe exists, therefore the universe has an explanation of its existence. And the explanation for the universe's existence is therefore God. Remember that necessary being. So let's one more time look at each of the premises and see what we mean by each of these. Premise one says this: everything that exists has an explanation of its existence, either in the necessity of its own nature, because we philosophers anyway tend to think some things are necessary, like numbers, certain abstract objects, or some external cause. But that external cause would have to be something, remember, that's timeless, baseless, immaterial, non-physical. And that doesn't leave a lot of options. But an atheist might say to premise one, they may object and say, well, the universe doesn't have a cause. But that seems problematic. The theist might reply, yes, and here's why. Do you remember that video where there was this shiny ball on there? Imagine a translucent ball. You're walking in a forest and you see it. And your friend says to you, after you say to them, I wonder where that came from. Oh, don't worry about it. It just is. Well, if I came across something like a crystal ball in the woods, I wouldn't just think that it's a brute fact that it is. I would think that it was caused by something. And it doesn't matter if it's this small or the size of a car or the size of the house or the size of a planet or the size of the whole universe. I wouldn't just say, well, it needs no explanation. That seems like special pleading, at least on the part of atheism. It just is. And it seems to me kind of crazy that an atheist would say something like, well, nothing collides with nothing to create everything. That doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense. So where did this translucent ball come from? And another thing is something called the taxi cab fallacy. In other words, what is it? What do I mean by this? Well, this is a fallacy where a person, they arrive at their destination. Maybe they gave reasons for everything else in the world through chemistry and physics and whatever. But when it comes to the final thing, that is the universe, all of a sudden, they just wave the explanation away, kind of like you would a taxi driver after they dropped you off where you want to go. You use all of this reasoning to get to where you want to go, but when it comes to the universe, you're going to give them a free pass and just wave off the explanation. That seems, well, disingenuous at best. And it's unscientific because it undermines modern cosmology. I mean, there's a whole field devoted to the study of the explanation of the universe and its origins. Why would you dismiss the whole field because you don't want to interact with the question of the explanation of the universe? Where did it come from? And again, it begs the question to assume that atheism is true. I mean, why should they get special pleading? I don't think they should, and we need to keep them honest. Now, they might attack the second premise. Remember, the second premise says this: if the universe has an explanation for its existence, that explanation is God or a necessary being. Now, if the universe contains all physical reality, remember this, then the cause of the universe must transcend that physical reality. So the atheist might fire back with a second objection and say, well, actually, the universe exists necessarily. Okay, I'll grant necessary being, but it's just the universe that's necessary. Well, a theist can reply to that and say, well, no, that's not the case, and here's why. It seems like none of the things that make up the universe, stars and planets and moons and things like that, exists necessarily. I mean, at one point or the other, none of them existed. I mean, if you really think about it, why think that the universe is necessary? I mean, the matter that makes up the universe could have been arranged differently, right? It doesn't have to be the way it is. Something could have failed to exist. And the truth is, well, it seems like the universe just simply is a collection of contingent things that were brought into being. Now, by the way, if the universe was necessary, as an atheist might try to claim, this would require that the universe be both eternal, meaning lasting forever, and could not fail to exist, and changeless. That means that it would be as it is in all possible worlds. Remember the possible world semantics, which leads us to what's called hard determinism. If the universe is both eternal, which won't make sense, especially when we look at the second cosmological argument, and it's changeless, that means that everything has been hardly determined. Well, that's not a good way of saying it. It has been determined in a hard manner. This is hard determinism. And it simply means this: things couldn't be any different than they are. And you know what that does? It undermines free choice. That means that we are all under the illusion that we're making choices. It also undermines truth. There would be no such thing as truth if everything were determined. We'd just be information outputters. But it seems to me that we have good grounds to believe that we are free, and that actually the universe could have failed to exist, or any certain part of it might not have existed, and that it came into being out of something, or something caused it, rather, if it even wasn't out of something. So it seems like, why believe that the universe is necessary? And by the way, the Heisenberg uncertainty principle militates against this idea that the universe is both eternal and changeless. I mean, because when you try to measure, let's say, the velocity of a particle or its location, just observing it, the wave function will collapse. So you can't get a very specific or accurate location or speed at the same time. And so what this tells us is that the world can't be completely determined. And by the way, our own intuitions, what we might call modal intuitions, seem to tell us that the universe is contingent. I mean, it seems easy to conceive of the non-existence of certain things in the universe. I mean, why does one quark have to be here rather than there? Why one subatomic particle over there rather than here? So it seems to me that we have good reason to think that the universe is, well, contingent. It seems that's the way we experience it. Why think that a collection of contingent parts is necessary? So now let's move on to the second version. Remember, this first version we dealt with has to do with contingency, the contingency of the universe. It depends on something else for its existence, or an explanation for its existence. But now we're going to move on to a cosmological argument based on temporality. And let's just begin by watching this quick video on the temporality of the universe. This is the cosmological argument, sometimes called the Kalam cosmological argument, which deals with an argument from temporality. Take a quick look at this, and then we'll talk a little bit more about this argument.
Does God exist? Or is the material universe all that is, or ever was, or ever will be? One approach to answering this question is the cosmological argument. It goes like this: whatever begins to exist has a cause. The universe began to exist, therefore, the universe has a cause. Is the first premise true? Let's consider. Believing that something can pop into existence without a cause is more of a stretch than believing in magic. At least with magic, you've got a hat and a magician. And if something can come into being from nothing, then why don't we see this happening all the time? No, everyday experience and scientific evidence confirm our first premise. If something begins to exist, it must have a cause. But what about our second premise? Did the universe begin, or has it always existed? Atheists have typically said that the universe has been here forever. The universe is just there, and that's all. First, let's consider the second law of thermodynamics. It tells us the universe is slowly running out of usable energy, and that's the point. If the universe had been here forever, it would have run out of usable energy by now. The second law points us to a universe that has a definite beginning. This is further confirmed by a series of remarkable scientific discoveries. In 1915, Albert Einstein presented his general theory of relativity. This allowed us, for the first time, to talk meaningfully about the past history of the universe. Next, Alexander Friedman and Georges Lemaître, each working with Einstein's equations, predicted that the universe is expanding. Then in 1929, Edwin Hubble measured the red shift in light from distant galaxies. This empirical evidence confirmed not only that the universe is expanding, but that it sprang into being from a single point in the finite past. It was a monumental discovery, almost beyond comprehension. However, not everyone is fond of a finite universe, so it wasn't long before alternative models popped into existence. But one by one, these models failed to stand the test of time. More recently, three leading cosmologists, Arvind Bord, Alan Guth, and Alexander Vilenkin, proved that any universe which has on average been expanding throughout its history cannot be eternal in the past, but must have an absolute beginning. This even applies to the multiverse, if there is such a thing. This means that scientists can no longer hide behind a past eternal universe. There is no escape. They have to face the problem of a cosmic beginning. Any adequate model must have a beginning, just like the standard model. It's quite plausible then that both premises of the argument are true. This means that the conclusion is also true. The universe has a cause. And since the universe can't cause itself, its cause must be beyond the space-time universe. It must be spaceless, timeless, immaterial, uncaused, and unimaginably powerful. Much like God. The cosmological argument shows that, in fact, it is quite reasonable to believe that God does exist.
Well, I hope that video kind of opened your eyes and the graphics helped you to understand it better. Let me just give you a little bit of historical background. You see, Greek philosophers thought that the universe and matter were uncreated and eternal. To them, God only brought order to the universe. But the Jewish mind was very different. And if you read in scriptures, you get this idea, that passage in John 1 that we looked at, verses 1 and 3. We know that actually the whole world came into being through God, through Jesus, and that he created out of nothing, ex nihilo, it's sometimes said. So the Greeks thought that the universe was eternal, but the Jews never thought that way. They actually thought it as created. So the Greek view, that's Plato and Aristotle, thought that matter was uncreated and eternal. But the Hebrew mind said, no, God created the universe out of nothing. And by the way, there is no Hebrew word for universe. They use words like heaven and earth, hashemayim or haaretz. There was no pre-existing material. God literally creates everything. And this is what we also see in John 1. Well, in about the 12th century, there was a Muslim theologian named Al-Ghazali who actually disagreed with the Greek view, because at this time, some of the Greek philosophy was starting to become in vogue again what was the eastern part of the Roman Empire. And he argues this. He says, it's impossible for the universe to be beginningless. He says, therefore, there must be a creator. So Al-Ghazali was looking for a cause of the beginning. Now, he's not looking for that explanation like Leibniz was, but a cause for the beginning. Hence, we get this term, the Kalam cosmological argument. And remember, Kalam is just an Arabic word for, well, medieval spirituality, we'll say. So what about this argument from temporality? Let's take a look at each premise. Whatever begins to exist has a cause. Well, that seems to make a sense. Notice that it says whatever begins to exist, not whatever exists has a cause. And the second premise is this, the universe began to exist. Finally, you get to the conclusion, therefore, the universe has a cause. I mean, now, the logic is airtight. If the premises are true, then the conclusion follows necessarily and inescapably. But what about the premises? Can we look at those? Okay, so let's take a look at premise one. Whatever begins to exist has a cause. Well, that seems right intuitively. I mean, something can't come from nothing. Out of nothing, nothing comes. You don't get being from non-being. So whatever begins to exist, seems to me it would have to have a cause. And if it doesn't have to have a cause, why is it that only universes can be causeless? How is it that whole universes can pop into being with all these things, but nothing else? How come our experience isn't telling us, well, we're just not seeing that. We don't see kangaroos and cabbages popping into existence. So it seems to me that common experience and scientific evidence confirm premise one. So we have both philosophical and scientific evidences for this. And remember, the best science that we have, the best empirical evidence that we have through the work of Einstein's general theory of relativity, people like George Lemaître and Hubble, people who have measured both the red shift and really confirm that the universe is expanding, this is the best empirical, and remember, we atheists want to see empirical evidence. This is the best empirical data that we have. And this evidence supports our premise here. So there are three famous scientists, Bohr, Guth, and Vilenka. And they came up with a proof. And I'm not talking about just a hypothesis. They offered a mathematical proof that says this, that any universe that has on average been expanding throughout its history cannot be past eternal. It has to have a finite space-time boundary. In other words, it can't have been going on forever. If it's an expanding universe, and we have good reasons to believe that, that's our best empirical evidence, then if this universe that we live in has been expanding, then it can't be an eternal universe. It had to begin at a certain point in the distant past. It has a finite space-time boundary. This is the Bohr-Guth-Vilenka theorem. And folks, we just have to face it. This is the best empirical evidence that we have. And the atheist has to face this. They want empirical evidence. This is empirical evidence, and it supports premise one. But what about premise two? Did the universe begin to exist? Well, just as I said, our best scientific evidence, the empirical evidence, shows this. I mean, and think about it. If the universe has never began to exist, that means the number of past events is infinite. Now, to kind of put that in a crude way, if I said to my friend Jenna, Jenna, will you go down the road and buy a gallon of milk from the corner store? It's just an infinity down the way. How long would it take her to get there? Well, she never would, because the distance she'd have to traverse is infinite, and you can't cover an infinite distance. This would be like jumping out of a bottomless pit. You have nothing to push off of. There's no beginning. And by the way, the second law of thermodynamics militates against this. That is to say, this law tells us that actually the universe is trying to reach a thermal equilibrium, which just means is that we're slowly dying a heat death. We're trying to, throughout the universe, we're trying to get the energy levels to be exactly the same. And if the universe were eternal, it would have run out of usable energy by now. We wouldn't have any energy. And if the universe had been going on forever, there would be an infinite number of prior events. And that means we'd never reach this point. You and I wouldn't be having this conversation. So reaching an actual infinite is impossible. Now, what do I mean by an actual infinite? Well, an actual infinite needs to be contrasted with a potential infinite. And by a potential infinite, I mean something that's indefinite. So a potential infinite is something that's moving toward infinity as a boundary, but it never reaches it. It's like adding one number to a series of numbers on and on and on. It never reaches its end. And sometimes you'll know what that is. You know that lemniscate, it looks like a sideways eight, the figure eight. People say that means infinity. Actually, it probably means indefinite is a better way of saying that. The Hebrew letter Aleph, that is the term you want to use for an actual infinity. And an actual infinity just doesn't exist anywhere in nature. So we're not going to find that. So it's impossible to form an infinite collection of things by adding one member after another. You can't jump out of a bottomless pit. And the standard model, that's the one that we have the most empirical evidence for, the Big Bang, if you will, describes a universe that is not eternal in the past, but which came into being a finite time ago. This is confirmed by the Bohr-Guth-Vilenka theorem. And if the universe were eternal, remember, it would have run out of usable energy by now. So premise two, did the universe begin to exist? It seems like modern science suggests that the universe began to exist a finite time ago. Bohr-Guth-Vilenka theorem, the second law of thermodynamics, the standard model. So, by the way, this has been a theory that's held for 80 years. It's still the best one we have to go for. And if the atheist wants the best scientific evidence available, well, that one, that is the Big Bang, confirms the second premise in our argument. So we have good reason to believe that the second premise is true. Now, there are competing models, and we're not going to get into all of them in this class. But if you want to know, I can email you about them. There's the steady state model, oscillating models, vacuum fluctuation models, chaotic inflationary models, quantum gravity models, and string scenarios. We could look at each one of those in turn, but actually, if you compare them to the one that stood over 80 years, over 90, I'd say, they pale in comparison in terms of the amount of empirical evidence we have that confirm these discoveries or confirm these theories. So truth is, we live in a universe that seems to have come into being, according to our best scientific information and our theories, a finite time ago. So this has theological significance. When you get to the third premise, the universe has a cause, whatever that cause is, it must be itself uncaused. And it must transcend space and time. And it must be immaterial. And it must be unchanging, powerful, and personal. Now, why do I say all those things? It can't be something that involves space, time, and matter, because remember, those didn't exist until after the Big Bang. But so it would have to be timeless, spaceless, and immaterial. It would also have to be unimaginably powerful to bring all this into being, and it would have to choose to do this, to bring the universe into being at a certain point. And that means it's personal, meaning it has a mind. So a powerful, personal, immaterial, uncaused, timeless, spaceless mind has brought this world into being. And you may not like to use the term, as the video said, but we like to call this person God. You have the option of saying something else. That, my friends, is the second of the two cosmological arguments. I hope this was helpful. I look forward to discussing it with you in the chat rooms in just a few moments. Thanks for tuning in. I'm gonna go get some more.